The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Leaving Hamas in Gaza would be as ridiculous as having left the Nazis in Germany after World War II and hoping that they might change their ways. Nobody would have said that was a rational thought.
Are you saying today that you will take control of the entire 26-mile Gaza Strip as it was 20 years ago to this month in 2005?
Well, we don't want to keep it. We want to have a security perimeter. We don't want to govern it. We don't want to be there as a governing body. We want to hand it over to Arab forces that will govern it properly without threatening us and giving Gazans a good life. That's not possible with Hamas. The only way that you're going to have a different future is to get rid of this neo-Nazi army. The Hamas are monsters. Look at what they're doing to our people. Look at what they're doing to the way they massacred, raped, beheaded our people, our men and women. Burned our babies, and they are really cruel to their own people, because when we try to take them away from the combat zones, they shoot them. They want people to be civilian casualties. They want a starvation policy that they themselves are trying to put into being, and we're doing everything to reverse that.
This lines up exactly with what the prime minister said would be the goal right after October 7th, that he wanted to eradicate Hamas from Gaza and also to bring all of the hostages home.
This is a show where we try to analyze news. And yet, I think now we should pause and appreciate what Netanyahu has achieved, because it was... This is like a master of chess. He managed, against the will of the United States, against a fractured government, a hostile press, an unruly army, or at least the unruly brass of the army, all of whom at every stop were pushing for some kind of compromise. And Netanyahu said, win, 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 win. And when he began to say this, people mocked him. And he kept onto this line. He managed to leverage that into a changing of the strategic balance between Israel and Iran in Israel's favor. When we looked at the tragedy, it did not seem possible that we could use this very easily for our advantage. And he was maneuvering against even a hostile cabinet throughout this whole complex line of events. And you should just appreciate his talent as a politician.
Absolutely.
As a strategist, as a player on the world stage, as a manipulator of the forces within Israel's politics and also in Israel's public opinion.
It's the 200th day of President Trump's administration. I think the greatest 200 days in modern American politics. And when I say modern, I go back to the beginning of the 20th century. Just absolutely incredible of what this individual has done with his leadership and a great team around him.
Stephen, the naysayers have been pushing back on everything the administration has tried, and yet here we are. So let's talk about these accomplishments for the first 200 days.
Look, you know, the president has accomplished so much in the first 200 days. Whether you're talking about restructuring the global trading system to put American workers and American businesses first for the first time in decades, putting us on fairer ground vis-a-vis the rest of the world, securing commitments to invest hundreds of billions, trillions of dollars in the American economy, passing the One Big Beautiful Bill with its huge tax incentives for investing in the United States, energy abundance, lower energy prices for everyone. It's just win after win after win from President Trump. This is 100% promises made, promises kept. The president is fulfilling on every single pledge he made on the campaign trail and doing it very successfully.
It is interesting, going back 4 years, 8 years, even 10 or 12 years, Trump has remade the political map on immigration, very important, on tariffs, protecting American jobs. Most underrated issue. We could talk more about that if you want. But a lot of people see tariffs as protecting jobs, immigrants, illegals taking their jobs away. And the last point, which Hatton didn't mention, is the whole issue of woke. Woke and DEI and trans, you know, men playing in women's basketball. These were such big issues in the election last year, and they're staying. Trump's remaining on the warpath, and that's one of the reasons he's doing great. Democrats don't know how to respond to it.
I think the economists and the panickins are now trying to figure out how to change the narrative in real time, because he just continues to win. And that's why I said, you may agree or not agree with his policy right now, but these announcements, he's pivoted Apple. You've got Tim Cook, $600 billion committing to onshoring. You've got Jensen Huang committing to onshoring. TSMC bringing capacity here. And I know we'll talk more about that in the show, but across the board, you watch these earnings, they're good, they're optimistic.
I can't think of a more influential president during this century, and it starts here with tariffs. He said he was going to raise tariffs, and despite the claims otherwise, he is in fact doing that. The effective tariff rate at this point looks to be 9 times as high as it was last year, the highest since the 1930s in FDR, Omar. And when it comes to immigration, net migration, we are seeing record low levels, way down from where we were during the Biden administration. We are potentially looking at negative net migration for the first time in at least 50 years. And that is a big reason why that I'm saying that Trump, at least in my mind, is the most influential president, certainly this century, and probably dating a good back chunk into the 20th century as well, Omar.
We're witnessing a dramatic realignment in the world today, and we've pointed this out in recent programs, but just look at what Bibi says. He's going to remake the Middle East. He said that the day after October 7. He's going to change the face of the Middle East. And you heard one in the cold open there say that Donald Trump has remade the political map. Just dramatic, earth-shaking developments, and it's all happened just in the last few years. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We appreciate you joining us on today's show. The last show of the week, can you believe it? Can you believe just how fast these weeks go by? These years have gone by so fast, the last few. It just, with all the events, it makes your head spin. In any event, you can get to the live video stream of this program at TrumpetDaily.com or at the Rumble channel, Rumble.com/TrumpetDaily/TrumpetDaily. There we go. Another brain freeze here as we start. So much going on here on campus as well. My wife and I are in the midst of flushing, cleansing, all kinds of health improvement steps. It's been busy with that. We're, of course, busy getting ready for orientation. And we need to be energetic and healthy going into a very busy fall semester. And then, of course, just all the classes that the instructors here on campus have to get ready for. So I came into this morning's prep and thought, you know what? I don't have just this incredible angle on everything. I was looking through some of the previous notes where every day, though, is as busy as it's been. As you know, if you watch this show, there's always leftovers. There's always many, many clips that we can't even get to. And so I was looking through some of that. And then, of course, all of this breaking news with respect to Israel heading into Gaza to occupy Gaza, as you heard there in the cold open. And so I thought, well, to make it easy, maybe we'll just assemble as many clips as possible. And I think Jesse told me that with all the clips that we have, there's about three. If we played all of them, there's about 3 minutes left for me. So there you go. We won't play all of them, don't worry. But we'll play as many as we can because there's so much that's happening. My father, he taped a program yesterday on Jeremiah's commission. This is August 7th, so it'll play not this weekend, but next weekend. This weekend's show is on the Sure Word of Prophecy, and we've actually got some clips from that program as well. That plays this weekend. But the one that he gave on Jeremiah's commission, he talked about just the pace of world events and how that God is hastening things along. And in fact, you can see from Peter's epistles that we ought to be praying earnestly to hasten the return of Jesus Christ. We want it to happen sooner rather than later. Because look at this world. I mean, some could look at these events that you saw in the cold open and get excited and think that, well, finally, we can stamp out Hamas. or this realignment in the Middle East, it'll be good for the world. Or what Donald Trump is doing, he's remaking the political landscape. I mean, it's really incredible to watch, and whoever said it in the cold open is right. The Democrats don't know how to respond. That's why they're fleeing from Texas and heading to Chicago, heading to Illinois, where they certainly don't gerrymander there. No, no. their heads are exploding because Donald Trump is on the offensive. Donald Trump's getting into the gutter with them. You're going to gerrymander in California and Illinois and Massachusetts and everywhere else, then we'll do it too. And the Democrats know if this happens, they will never win again. And this is why they're so panicked in the first place, because they've lost their hold on power, just as we told you they would. We told you that Obama would be silenced. All of this has happened. God said that it would. You look at this weekend's Key of David, the sure word of prophecy. You can't make sense of these head-spinning events unless you understand or are a student of Bible prophecy. Jeremiah 1 and verse 10, this is in the Farrar Fenton translation. It says, "See, I have appointed you today over nations and kingdoms to pull up." This is the commission God gave to a young prophet to pull up. It's talking about the throne of David, to pull up and to break down and to destroy and to erase and build as well as to build and to plant. So there were three overturns, as my father explained in his 2017 book, The New Throne of David. And then it was erased. And then God had to establish a new throne in his church. Notice what it says in the next two verses. "Moreover," so he just continues the thought, "the word of the eternal came unto me, saying, Jeremiah, what do you see? And I said, I see a rod of an almond tree. And then said the eternal unto me, you have well seen, for I will hasten my word to perform it." So God gave Jeremiah a commission regarding the throne of David. And it relates directly to what God's church is doing today. Again, I'll have to leave it to you to go and study the New Throne of David book. If you don't have that in your library, everything that we offer on this program is offered without cost or obligation. It's free for the taking. If you just call the number there on the screen or go to our website, thetrumpet.com, you can get to all of this material. Of course, the Trumpet magazine, the latest, I know they're working on the one right after this, but the latest one on the rising lion, Israel's rising lion. I mean, how timely is this given what we're seeing in the news? I mean, this is what Bibi Netanyahu is doing at the moment. The whole world is against it. But what he is doing is a bit of Churchillian ruthlessness. It's a rising lion spirit. We're going into Gaza. Doesn't matter what the world says. Well, what about the starvation? What about all of this? It's Hamas that's the cause of that. As so many people have said, if Israel was actually carrying out genocide, well, they're pretty bad at it. Here they're just sending through tons of aid. Who does this? Mark Levin pointed this out recently. Who goes to war against an enemy and then feeds the citizens of the enemy? This has never been done in history. Who goes to war and goes and just bends over backwards to try to avoid civilian casualties? Never mind the propaganda that's out there from even some on the right saying that Israel's carrying out a genocide. Shame on them for fueling that propaganda. Of course there's casualties of war. It's war. But Israel, I mean, if anything, you read the book of Joshua and Judges, if anything, Israel is too restrained. I mean, if I have time, there's lots of clips, as I told you. But you have Huckabee, you have others, you have Bibi himself talking about the Old Testament, the truth of God, and how the Bible is real and it's alive. Well, if you dig deeply into the book of Joshua, you see the instructions that God gave to Joshua. He said, I'm not interested in a two-state solution here. I'm giving you this land. Now you go and take it and you make it one state, one Israelite state. But you see, that's just, that offends the sensibilities of the elites of today. You can't fight wars like you did in the past. You just have to make it proportional. But there's something even beyond the proportionality argument that we've seen so often with modern Israel's history. There's a demonic hatred for Jews, just pure and simple. They can't go into Gaza. They can't continue this fight because they're Jews. I mean, that's the bottom line. And we might as well just say it. Verse 12 again. When the ever-living answered me, this is Farrar Fenton, attend to what you see, for I am watchful over my promises to perform them. I'm watchful. I'm hastening it along, God says. In the New Throne of David, my father writes this, God says he's going to speed up events. He will hasten to perform his word. God emphasizes haste and no more delay. You can read that in Revelation 1 or Revelation 10 and verse 6. It says events are going to move really fast. Receiving David's throne shows both how close we are to going to a place of protection or safety, and also how much God wants to empower us to get his message out faster and more forcibly. Now, this book came out, or at least the messages that became this book, that was all rolled out in the early part of 2017. Those were the first months of Donald Trump's first term as president. I mean, how long ago does that seem in one sense? And in another sense, it seems like the snap of a finger these past 8 years. We were telling you right at the start of Trump's first term, he's coming in the spirit of a Jeroboam type. And look at all that has happened since. Look at what's been exposed. Look at what has been remade or refashioned. Look at the miracles. The miracles that had to take place for Donald Trump to even return to power. And then now that he's there, I mean, look at all of the king-like authority he's exercising. He's bringing in, you know, federal troops to Washington, D.C. to protect the streets. He's a force of will in Texas saying, look, you gerrymander too. That's what they do. Let's pick up those five seats. You see why their heads are exploding. The hastening along of these events, the pace. That was the subject of the program that my father recorded yesterday on Jeremiah's commission. And this clip 30 that we'll play for you, he's commenting on these few verses in Jeremiah that we just read, clip 30.
God says, okay, he's come to this point where there is something happening, and it's going to speed up the events of God beginning in this time of 2017. What is that all about? Why is God hastening the time? Because, well, there is very great danger in this world, and God is going to have to get here and stop the nuclear war at the very last few minutes, perhaps. And that is critical. Everything is hastened, and God has to be here doing all of this and a lot of things at that time. So he says his message is going to be faster and more forcibly. Here he's saying that he's going to speed up events. Now, this was written about in 2017, and if you've noticed, they have been really, really hastened and racing along. And they're going to do that right up until the second coming of Jesus Christ. That's what this is all about. He's going to speed up events because this world is about to explode right in our faces with nuclear bombs and all kinds of weapons of mass destruction. He says, I will hasten, and this suggests that God is going to do this in person.
God is intervening directly in person, as it says there in the New Throne of David. As he pointed out there, I mean, if you look around, if you notice, I mean, look at the world we're in. Who could have imagined the Middle East
In 2017, who could have imagined the Middle East realigning the way that it has so dramatically and so quickly just in the past 22 months? And then who could have imagined Donald Trump coming in against all of that resistance in 2017 and Barack Obama, the dear leader, talking about, you know, if there's one thing about the United States that we're known for, our government, is that there's always a smooth transition of power. What a liar. He was attacking. He was lying and attacking. From the start. Someone was saying, I mentioned yesterday on the show, just talking about the parallels between America under attack and what happened to God's church back in the late 80s and early 90s. How that you could have titled Malachi's message to God's church today, God's church under attack. That's what happened. It was nearly blotted out. And then America under attack. And Satan using the same playbook. And it was nearly blotted out, America was. And then all of these miracles, all of these dramatic events. Listen to Bibi Netanyahu in that same interview with Fox earlier today, clip 5.
But, you know, when it's a Southern Front war, and look at what we did. You know, we were attacked. We were on the verge. Everybody thought this is the end of Israel on October 7th when Hamas cruelly invaded us and those monsters took the hostages and murdered the men and raped the women and beheaded. It's beyond belief. And burned babies, okay? And everybody said, oh, Israel is gone. And I said on the second day of the war, I said, we're going to change the face of the Middle East. And we went against Hamas, then we went against Hezbollah, the terror proxies of Iran. Then we had the downfall of the murderous Assad regime in Syria. And then we went after Iran, and President Trump joined us, which was a magnificent act of solidarity against a common enemy. Everybody said, oh, well, you know, Israel's not going to be together, but it is. Now we have to complete the job of eliminating basically the last proxy of Iran that's still standing.
He makes an important point there because, I mean, we've noted the reaction around the world, mostly from the Muslim community in Britain and the United States, but a lot of them just, you know, bleeding heart liberals. They took to the streets to cheer on Hamas, to support Hamas. And a lot of the reason why, as Bibi notes there, is that they thought Israel was finished. They thought the Jewish state was over. Well, it didn't turn out that way because of Israel's rising lion. And the lion continues. Now, we'll get into Israel's divided government and divided military here in just a second, because with what Bibi said there in that interview, that was recorded right before he went in with his cabinet for that 10-hour session to try to get their approval to go in and occupy Gaza. And now, following that cabinet meeting, we know that it's not quite as ambitious as Bibi was hoping for. That's because you've got to compromise. Israelite nations, they always have to compromise. They can't use the playbook of the book of Joshua and Judges. That's out of the question. You know, we've got to get a coalition. We've got to get the board members together and make sure everybody agrees to just how far we can go here, because you know that as soon as we take this action, I mean, the world universally is going to condemn us. They're going to say we're carrying out genocide. They're not going to talk about Hamas and how, as he described there, how they're starving hostages. They killed babies and mothers and wives. They raped them first sometimes. They're not going to universally condemn that. No. The condemnation is reserved for Israel. The condemnation is reserved for the Jews. You've got people holding up Gaza, almost like they worship Hamas and the two-state solution. It's like a religion for them. It's like people that just blindly go along with evolution. Well, this is what I believe. This is my, Herbert Armstrong used to say, this is my faith. It takes a lot of faith to believe in something you cannot prove, or in the case of Hamas and the hatred, the Jew hatred that Hamas has for Israel, Hezbollah, Iran, all of them. to just shove that aside and say, yeah, Israel's the problem. I mean, you have to have a kind of blind faith, an ignorance that the devil loves to exploit and manipulate. And that's what we're seeing. The New York Times, Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu faced international and domestic criticism on Friday after his office announced that the Israeli military would escalate its nearly two-year-old campaign in Gaza. I didn't check, but I assume that's the first line. Here comes the New York Times. Netanyahu, wah, 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 wah. So, I mean, anti-Israel negative. It faced international and domestic criticism. Yeah, there's criticism at home. There's criticism abroad. There's universal condemnation. Ben Bibi's going forward, I guess. Statements by Britain and the families of hostages held by militant groups in Gaza reflected Mr. Netanyahu's intensifying clash with both some long-standing allies abroad and supporters of hostages at home. This is the clash that the New York Times emphasizes. The clash with the families of hostages and with nations abroad. What about the clash with Hamas? What about the war that Hamas started? What about the raping and the burning and the pillaging and the murder and the hostage taking? What about the fact that these hostages are starving to death in tunnels for 600 days? My wife watched that opening the other day with the hostage digging his own grave in tunnels. You know, she's been encouraging me to get outside more and get some of the benefits of, you know, your feet on the soil and the sunlight and so on, the health benefits. Imagine being in a darkened tunnel beneath the surface of the earth for 2 years and not seeing any sunlight. Forget about the fact that he's being starved to death, but not receiving any of the nutrition benefits from the sun that just gives life to our planet. That's what's happening with these 20 hostages that are still alive. We presume anyway, 30 more that are dead. Why won't Hamas give them back? Why isn't Hamas interested in making peace? It's astounding to me that the clashes, the divisions that the New York Times is just so excited to get into. It's Bibi against the families, Bibi against the UK and Starmer, Bibi, oh, maybe there's a division between Trump. What about Hamas and the division between the terrorists and Jews that they want to exterminate? I mean, that's like the elephant in the room. If you can't talk about that, then you are a propagandist, pure and simple. The Israeli government's decision to further escalate its offensive in Gaza is wrong, and we urge it to reconsider immediately, Keir Starmer said. Okay, what if it was happening on your border? What if enemy combatants came into the shores of the UK and murdered and raped and pillaged? How would the UK respond? Why would every other nation say, well, of course we should respond in kind and then some, but not with Israel. No, Israel's got to exercise restraint. Israel's got to pull back. The Times of Israel says here, opposition leaders, families of hostages held in Gaza, and various international actors all issued swift condemnations Friday to the Security Cabinet's decision to take over Gaza City. See, now it's just Gaza City. You see the interview with Fox News before he went into the cabinet meeting. It was all the strip, all of Gaza. Now it's just the city. See, already he's handcuffed. I mean, it takes a rising lion spirit just to go in there in any capacity. But now you see, here come the handcuffs. Okay, I mean, we don't like it. We don't like it, but you better make sure you exercise restraint. Otherwise, a civilian might die. Oh, you mean like on October 7? When 1,200 civilians were not just casualties of war, they were targeted. You see? You see the difference in the mindset here? They were targeted. They wanted to kill women and babies and families. They wanted to destroy communities. Same with Iran when they fired missiles just randomly into Tel Aviv, killing 30 or 40 more Israelis. They're not going after soldiers. This is not like on the battlefield against other soldiers. It's just kill Jews. And then Israel's got to be so strategic. I mean, if it's not a Hamas fighter, then there's going to be universal condemnation. It says here, overnight, the high-level body approved a proposal by Benjamin Netanyahu to take over the densely populated city that would be Gaza City, bucking warnings from the Israel Defense Forces. Even the IDF doesn't want to do this. Gadi Taib is right. There's division in Shin Bet, in the IDF. I mean, about the only agency or organization left that's got a focus on Israel's survival is the Mossad and Bibi. That's where the rising lion spirit is. Everything else has been so politicized, so divided. I mean, they finally got rid of the attorney general in Israel. She's a rabid Bibi hater, just like so many people around the world. The limitation of the takeover to Gaza City did not seem to go as far as what had earlier been characterized as a plan to occupy the entirety of the strip. Netanyahu told Fox News hours before the security cabinet convened that a full takeover was the intention. See, he went into the interview, said, "This is my plan." And he came out of the cabinet meeting after the interview and said, "Well, the plan," he didn't say this, but this is the reality. "The plan, it's dialed back a bit because, you know, there's just pressure. There's pressure internally. There's pressure internationally." Listen again to this interview with Fox News earlier today, clip two.
"People say you can't both release the hostages and eliminate Hamas, and I disagree. I think so far we've shown that we can, and I intend to complete the job. But we have three missions. One, to eliminate the Hamas as a governing and military power in Gaza. Otherwise, there's no future for anyone. And we'll have many more kidnappings and many more hostages. Second, achieve the liberation of all our hostages. And third, make sure that Gaza doesn't pose a threat to Israel again. And we're well on our way to achieve all three. Now, there are difficulties because there's so much vilification and misrepresentation in the press. There's an attempt to put blame on Israel for the interdiction of humanitarian supplies that Hamas is interdicting, and Israel is the international community is delivering the blame to Israel. They're doing everything to rob these food trucks. They're taking the food for themselves and then jacking up the price for the remaining supplies to their own population. That's monstrous.
We have seen some of that, and you're right about that. And you're also right that we went into Gaza while we've been here this week, and we were in the southern town of Rafah, near the Sinai Desert in Egypt, and that town has been flattened. And you have been accused of genocide. How do you respond to that?
Well, Ambassador Huckabee said, if we're practicing genocide, we're surely doing a very bad job of it, because we could have, you know, basically eliminated the entire population of Gaza, but we went the other direction.
Good for Fox News. They don't always hit a home run. We've criticized them before for many things, particularly the election steal. But I think this interview went on for like 25, 30 minutes. Good for them. Just let him speak. Let him explain. What about the flattened buildings? Well, listen to what Bibi went on to say about that, clip three.
And also, the reason you see the flattened buildings is because Hamas booby traps every single building. So when we come in, we first have the population moved, even though Hamas tries to keep them in the combat zones. But after they move and we start to move into the neighborhoods that are now populated only by terrorists, they ignite these booby traps. So what we do is we put in an APC, an armored personnel carrier, with a lot of explosives, detonate it. It sets off all the booby traps, and the buildings begin to collapse as a result of that. They're empty buildings. They're not populated buildings. Secondly, they've built this underground terror tunnel network with billions of dollars that they had. They didn't build Gaza up. They built a Gaza terror city underground. So we now detonate the tunnels. The tunnels explode, and they take down the buildings that are above the tunnels. And the reason you see this devastation is not because Israel is wiping out these structures filled with civilians. It's because they've been booby-trapped by Hamas, and that's the kind of warfare that we have to...
He's exactly right. Israel's not just randomly blowing up buildings. Imagine a country, I don't know what the population of Gaza is. I mean, I think it's 1-2 million people. But imagine a state, an independent state with full autonomy being run by, 20 or 30,000 Hamas monsters? If Israel, I'm speaking about Israel in the biblical sense, if little Israel, the United States, the UK, I mean, if they really wanted to show rising lion courage and strength, how quickly could this problem be fully and completely extinguished? Why handcuff someone? If you want to talk about hostages, I mean, we've emphasized the 50 Jewish hostages this week. What about the 1.5 or 2 million Palestinian hostages held hostage to these 30,000 barbarians? They're not building up Gaza. They're building the Hamas city underground. And that's where they torture people. That's where they kill Jews. That's where they starve them to death. That's where they keep them away from sunlight for 650 days. Of course, their families, the families of those hostages, are concerned that they might die now because of this offensive. But it's not like they're really living right now either. You saw the clip the other day. The poor guy looks like he's an Auschwitz victim. He's been there 2 years. He's digging his own grave.
It makes me think of that New York Post article from a year and a half ago. The woman that was being raped over and over again on October 7, and she said, just kill me. Just kill me, please. Put me out of my misery. Nobody wants to see hostages die. But do we want to see another October 7? Do we want to see October 7 times 10? Or times 100? You know, we've got an article coming out in the next trumpet about October 7, about my trip to Israel earlier this summer, and just what October 7 should mean to us. There's a lesson in this. Yes, there's a rising lion spirit, but there was not a rising lion before October 7. There was a sleeping lion. And Israel had been drifting into a state of complacency, a false sense of security. And when you see the successes of Trump's presidency, particularly here at home, I don't have time to get to all of it. As I told you, I wouldn't get to all the clips. But the danger here is drifting into a false sense of security and thinking that, well, everything's safe. Yeah, there's enemies 3 miles across the way. There's a nice security barrier there, though. But listen, we're peaceniks. We think dialogue can solve anything. And after all, everybody loves us. I mean, America's hot, President Trump keeps saying. We've already drifted into a spirit of complacency just because of the security barriers that we have. I mean, they're enormous. Two oceans and no hostile actors to our north or south for the most part. It's dangerous when you're lulled to sleep. And then someone in the watchtower says, they're mobilizing to do something significant. And the IDF, the peaceniks in the IDF say, oh, don't worry about it. Everything will be okay. And then October 7 happens. Why isn't there, I have a lot of clips about just Huckabee and Bibi and everyone talking about the Bible and the accuracy of it. But listen, when you see tragedies happen like October 7 in the scriptures,
I mean, you have great prophets of God that just started ripping their clothes off and pouring oil on their head and beseeching God and asking God, how did this happen? Why did it happen? What did we do? Do we see much of that today? I mean, you see everyone shoring up their defenses in Israel. They're certainly at a heightened sense of security. Okay, well, that makes sense in a world that's kind of not looking to God for protection. But is there an ounce of repentance? Is there an attitude that just cries out to God, show me the error of my ways? What did we do wrong? How did this happen? It's easy to just put it all on Hamas and say, well, they're just barbarians. Well, they are barbarians. But how is there such a massive breach in security leading up to October 7? Why is the Israeli government so deeply divided? Why are they divided? Even if there's one place you need to be united, you would think it would be in the army, the military forces. But no, no. No, the leadership is sold on the two-state solution. And some higher-ups in the IDF, they worship. It's almost a religion for them. Gaza, two-state, peace process, Oslo. It's pretty amazing. 20, 30,000 monsters controlling the strip. And the whole world, the Western world, basically saying, that sounds good to me. Israel, just dial it back to nothing. Go back to October 6th and don't worry about it. And Bibi says, we can't do it. We've got to change the face of the Middle East. And so it continues. It takes a fair bit of courage to carry out a plan such as this. Listen to Netanyahu as he is asked here about whether or not, you know, President Trump is on board with this. This is clip 4.
Has President Trump given the green light for your plan to take over the remaining 25% of Gaza and occupy all of it?
Well, you know, he understands that it's Israel who's going to do the fighting. It's not American soldiers.
Did he give you a yes?
Well, he just says, no, Israel will do what it has to do, and we haven't got into that kind of discussion. But we have gotten into a discussion on two things. One, the humanitarian surge that we're going to do, which will precede our final military action, because I want the population to be in safe zones, to have food, water, sewage, electricity, medical help. I want to free 2 million Gazans from Hamas terrorism. The second thing that we agree on is that the day after has to have certain principles. I'm not talking about a detailed plan yet, because I think that'll be developed. But the five principles, the key principles are these. One, Hamas has to lay down its arms. Two, Gaza has to be demilitarized. Three, all the hostages have to be released. And four, Israel will be responsible for overall security. So if there's an attempt to have a resurgent Hamas or resurgent terrorism, you know, we're the ones who are going to take care of it. And five, let Gaza be governed by a civilian authority that is not Israel. Because I don't want to occupy Gaza forever. I don't want to govern Gaza. I want to have a different governance there that basically is willing to live in peace with Israel and give Gazans a different future. That's entirely different from these unbelievable lies that are leveled against us, frankly, against me too, by the international press that doesn't care to check the facts.
No, they just spew out lies nonstop. He said there earlier that his goal, one of them anyway, is to free 2 million Gazans being held hostage. He's going in to free Gaza from tyranny, from this police state, from these 20 or 30,000 barbarians roaming the streets with guns or hiding out in tunnels, booby-trapping buildings, shooting their own people in the back of the head if they flee the war zone, because they want the human shields. He talked about the lies there at the end. And here he mentions just the universal condemnation or what impact that has on his
his leadership in Israel. This is clip six.
But if I had to run the country based on the these vilifications, you know, I shouldn't be here. Mm. Because leaders should do what is right. What is right and what will withstand the test of time. And what will withstand the test of time is that an hour of peril, Israel didn't slumber like other democracies often do. In the face of this challenge to our existence, we took on a seven-front war, won it, and secured the peace and expanded the peace after this victory, expanding the Abraham Accords, creating a different Middle East. That's what we're in the process of doing. The last part is hard, but it's doable, and we'll do it.
He's created a different Middle East, that's true. But the one thing I disagree with there is that Israel didn't slumber. Well, no, I mean, even Gadi Taub in our interview, in one of the clips we played, I forget, but he talked about how that, you know, on October 8th, this man had no friends in Israel even. They wanted to run him out of town. I mean, you saw in the cold open the comment where he said, I mean, how do you go from that to basically changing the face of the Middle East when everybody wanted you to just leave and you wanted to hand over the government to a younger leader in Israel? I mean, you were sleeping on October 7th in the security sense, and Taub is right. I mean, it is unbelievable to see what has happened in the wake of October 7 and how much everything has changed in the Middle East and how Bibi is still standing. Everybody hates him. You've got to give him some credit. Not necessarily on what happened before October 7, but what he's done since. I mean, he was awakened. And you know another lesson from this too, and this isn't talked about, and I know I've made that point earlier this week, but this show, I mean, going back into Gaza after all these years, 20 years, it was 20 years ago this month when those Jews living in those kibbutzim in Gaza, they were uprooted, they were forcibly removed from Gaza, everything was handed over to the Palestinians, Hamas took over almost immediately, killing Fatah, launching rockets at Israel, kidnapping Israelis, killing soldiers, and then all of it culminating in October 7. What a disaster the pullout was 20 years ago this month. Just an unmitigated disaster in every respect, on every level. Now, in his defense, Bibi's, he does write about that catastrophe 20 years ago in his autobiography, his memoir. And I'll hopefully have time to get to that at some point. I've had it in the back of my notes for quite some time. So he resigned from government because of Ariel Sharon's decision to finally pull out. I mean, Sharon was a conservative for the longest time, but, you know, like Ehud Olmert, he was tired of fighting. What happens when you're tired of fighting and you just lay down your arms, you surrender basically? What happens? Well, look at what happened with Gaza 20 years later. Can we just, the Bible talks about having vision. Where there's no vision, the people perish. If you can't think two steps ahead of you, well, what does that say about your vision or lack thereof? You've got to see where things lead. I mean, you've got to look at root causes, and you've got, more importantly, you've got to learn the lessons of history. This is why all of that history is there recorded for us in the Old Testament, in Deuteronomy, in Joshua, in Judges. What a difficult position to be in. And look at what happens when you slumber, even if for just a short time. I mean, the Bible talks about the watchman. I forget which chapter this is in Isaiah, but I mean, you are leaning, you're in the watchtower, you're leaning over, you're peering into the distance. I mean, if you're doing your job right and you're anticipating attacks and you're preemptively striking to make sure that your people are safe, your nation is safe and secure. We really are living in the last days, dangerous, perilous times. I'll play one more. This is clip eight. Bibi talks here about the fake narrative that all of Gaza is starving, and the fact that the New York Times, the BBC, they're out there printing this picture
of this emaciated little baby saying that, look at what Bibi's doing to these children in Gaza. Listen to Bibi's response to that, clip 8.
Unfortunately, the New York Times and others, New York Times should be sued. I'm actually looking at whether a country can sue the New York Times, and I'm looking into it right now because I think it's such clear defamation. I mean, you put a picture of a child that's supposed to then represent all these supposedly starving children, yet they put in this picture of a child who has cerebral palsy, that they took another picture somewhere else in other media, a child who had cystic fibrosis, got nothing to do with starvation, or another child that we actually sent to Italy to be cured.
Israel actually intervening, just like they did with Sinwar. Yeah, he gets brain cancer in prison, serving 4 life sentences. Israel saves his life and then later gives him up in a prisoner swap. And then Sinwar sets out to plan October 7. But Israel's the bad guy here, just so that you know. The New York Times should be held to account. No doubt about it. How do they get away with these crimes? I mean, you want to talk about war crimes? How about plastering the picture of a kid with cerebral palsy and saying he's emaciated because of Bibi Netanyahu? I mean, what kind of impact does that lie, that audacious lie, have? Stirs up hatred for Israel the world over. And no one seems to bat an eye at it. Why does Israel have to expose these lies with truth bombs? Why aren't there fact checkers at the New York Times that are interested in correcting the record if they get it wrong? You know how it goes. They plaster it on the front page, even if it's propaganda, and then they make the correction on page B37 a few days later in the smallest of type. Melanie Phillips has an article at Jewish News Syndicate, The Media Front in the War on Civilization. Journalistic fraud has been committed in the service of a very great evil. Yes, there's a lot of evil, and it's not just what's happening on October 7. It's not just what's happening in Gaza. There's a lot of evil that goes on in newsrooms all over the world with people pushing propaganda as they come to work wearing suits and fine clothes. And I mean, they look sophisticated. They look like angels of light in some cases. The world, go back and, well, that'll be next week, I guess, my father's Key of David on Jeremiah's commission. This week, I had a section on the sure word of prophecy to go along with the theme of my father's show on the Key of David this weekend. Make sure that you go to the Trumpet website to see this weekend's Key of David and then come back next weekend for the hastening of world events. I didn't quite leave 3 minutes for World Watch, so we'll take you a couple minutes over on today's show, but we won't charge you anything for the extra content. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We thank you for joining us on today's show. We thank you for joining us all week, and we'll see you next time. Here's World Watch.
Over 85% of the humanitarian aid sent into Gaza from May 19th to August 4th this year was looted in transit, according to tracking data published by the UN Office for Project Services. Of the 2,604 trucks of aid collected from the crossings along Gaza's perimeter during the nearly 3-month period, only 300 arrived at their intended destination. Israel has come under heavy fire internationally since the early months of the war in Gaza, being accused of causing a famine in Gaza and intentionally starving Palestinians. However, a review conducted by UK Lawyers for Israel publicized in February made clear that this is a false claim, reliant on lies and miscalculations. In reality, Israel has safely provided Gazan civilians with significant amounts of humanitarian aid, even while fighting Hamas terrorists in Gaza. To understand more about why the international media so consistently backs terrorists instead of supporting Israel, read Truth and Lies About Antisemitism. The EU avoided a full-on confrontation with the US by signing a deal with President Trump on July 27th. To bring US tariffs on most EU goods down from the threatened 30%, the EU promised that its businesses will invest $600 billion in the US by 2028. It also promised to spend $750 billion on US energy over 3 years. In exchange, the US cut its projected tariffs on most EU goods to 15%. However, this trade deal is not the end of the story. Europe's 3-year energy commitment is particularly gigantic and will likely prove nearly impossible to fulfill, raising questions about what will happen down the line when it becomes clear that the EU is nowhere near meeting its commitment. European experts are calling the trade deal a resounding defeat for the EU. But EU leaders are calling for the creation of an alternative World Trade Organization where the US doesn't play a leading role, or is not involved at all. The EU is also preparing to replace the US as the foundation for Europe's defense. To learn more about the prophesied role of trade wars in the downfall of the US, read Trade Wars Are Here from the April 2025 Trumpet. The Bundeswehr, Germany's armed forces, ordered over 1,000 logistics vehicles worth 770 million euros from Rheinmetall, the German manufacturer said August 4th. In recent months, Germany has committed to increasing its defense spending and military power. As a result, many German manufacturing giants have shifted away from automotive production toward arms manufacturing. Rheinmetall's process of transforming civilian automobile production into military production has been underway for several months and is now producing notable results. Based on Bible prophecy, the Trumpet has forecast for decades that Germany would remilitarize, which will have devastating consequences for nations around the world. To understand where these developments are leading, request your free copy of Germany and the Holy Roman Empire. To learn more about current world news and how it relates to Bible prophecy, please visit thetrumpet.com.